You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, August 10th.
But when we have that thin crescent, shadows will become very sharp. So if you hold out your hand, you'll be able to easily see the shadows of your individual fingers.
Coming up on Big Talk with Michael Glab, Indiana University Astronomy Department Professor and Kirkwood Chair Katie Pilichowski talks this month's once-in-a-century eclipse.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks, what should be done about the ongoing opioid addiction crisis? But first, these local headlines.
Monroe County Council members could not find their way to approve a proposed 2018 budget of $3.7 million for the county's Central Emergency Dispatch Center. County Council member Jeff McKim said in the council's July 8th meeting, the difference between the proposed budget and the $2 million the dispatch center gets in safety tax proceeds is too great.
Now, I calculated this out, but you gave us a new budget at the last minute, but it comes out to about a $600,000 deficit still in the PS Lit fund of the dispatch center. So, I mean, I don't see how we could pass the budget as is today with that level of deficit.
The deficit was created by two funding requests not found in last year's budget. The first was a request for $800,000 for equipment to improve communication between 911 dispatch and township fire departments. The second was to fund additional staff. Communication manager Jeff Schemmer said the dispatch center needs more dispatchers in order to meet national standards set by the National Emergency Number Association.
The biggest change for us from this year is the increase. We're looking at adding six additional dispatchers to our current staffing, which is very much needed based on national standards by NENA. We should be at 34, and including myself and my assistant, we're actually at 25.
Schemmer said staffing levels are the same as when he started working in Central Emergency Dispatch 30 years ago. He added that being understaffed is driving up overtime costs. Bloomington Police Chief Mike Dekoff told the council the staff shortage is at a critical point and, quote, taxing their ability to do their job, end quote. Recounting Sheriff Brad Swain's request last year for additional deputies, County Council member Shelley Yoder asked if Central Dispatch could make do with fewer than six new positions.
None of the public safety employees can go anywhere until that dispatcher gets that call and sends it. And so that's the crucial first step. I understand, the sheriff and I have talked about personnel needs, and I understand his concern about his deputies. I have concerns about the number of officers that I have on the police department. But the thing that I want to stress is that the first point of contact is that dispatcher. Mm-hmm. If that information is not sent, nobody goes. And so the volume of calls that we have is very high. Those standards, those national standards, pretty sure are based on call volumes. Mm-hmm. So we're still below what the standards are.
Last year, the council filled the sheriff's request for new deputies by giving them half the positions in the 2017 budget and half in the 2018 budget. Schemmer said that anything less than six positions would not improve conditions at the dispatch center nor make a significant change in the overtime expenses. Though some council members expressed concern for Central Dispatch's staff shortage, they also noted the county has more public safety tax needs than public safety tax proceeds. Councilmember Lee Jones observed that when one entity gets an increase, the other entities are left struggling.
In particular, the county is responsible for a very overcrowded jail, which we're going to have to be looking at some point. So you know, I just think that everyone needs to understand that everyone has needs, and probably no one is going to get everything they're looking for.
The County Council unanimously approved an amended budget of $2.5 million, effectively putting a cap on the Emergency Dispatch Center's budget for 2018. The City Council will be the next body to vote on the budget and can approve a lower amount than the county amount, but not higher.
The Owen County Public Library is currently hosting the Indiana Heart Gallery. According to an Indiana Department of Child Services press release, the Heart Gallery raised awareness for children seeking adoptive families since 2007. The traveling photo gallery will be at the Owen County Public Library until the 18th of this month. The Indiana Heart Gallery's photos of children in need of adoption are all taken by volunteer professional photographers.
Indiana State Police troopers reportedly recovered firearms, crystal methamphetamine, and over $15,000 in cash during a raid in Bloomington on Tuesday. Kurt Dernal, public information officer with the Indiana State Police Post in Bloomington, said officers recovered the weapons, drugs, and cash from a property on South Old State Road 37.
State troopers with the local Bloomington State Police Post are part of what's called an aggressive criminal enforcement section. Now, these particular troopers are assigned the road, but they are also assigned in just combating the local drug problem and high rates of crime. So they initiated a search warrant that was in hand that was issued by the court of Monroe County in the 5600 block of Old 37 South. In Bloomington, investigation progressed with the assistance of the Indiana State Police Drug Enforcement Section, which is another section in our agency that specializes in these types of cases. The search recovered 26 different firearms, some long guns, some handguns. Two were found to have been reported stolen. So all the guns were ran, their numbers were ran in the computer just to check the database to see, and two of them were reported stolen. Almost 300 grams, I say that, approximately 300 grams of crystal methamphetamine were found, and over $15,000 in cash was also revealed at the house.
Dernal said the meth recovered has a street value of over $30,000. Troopers arrested 44-year-old Paxton Davis of Bloomington for dealing in methamphetamine, a level 2 felony, and possession of methamphetamine, a level 3 felony. Dernal said that although the public eye has shifted from methamphetamines to opioids, both are prevalent in South Central Indiana.
The problem that we have when the numbers are questioned is they're still both out there, and they're still both ruining and destroying lives, and not just the people who are consuming, but it's the families and the friends of these people. So to say a drug of choice or a switch being made between meth or opioids is tough. You know, you'd have to actually look at those numbers and you know, make a comparison over the years of how many different arrests were made. And again, you know, you look at that, even if you look at the numbers of how many arrests were made over a certain period of time, it's still could be inaccurate as far as, well, those were the people getting arrested. Well, what about the people who weren't getting arrested? And because we know that still exists. So it's hard to say when you want to pinpoint drug of choice or definitely a different move towards a different drug, it's hard to say because both still exist and both are still destroying lives and making communities unsafe.
When asked where the methamphetamines might have come from, Dernal said it was most likely made locally.
It's very much still being manufactured in the area, and it makes it such an easy drug to manufacture with the ingredients that go into it. You know, from what I've been told by our DES troopers in the field, you know, a lot of this stuff can be bought at your local drugstore, at your local retail vendor. So that's what makes it an easy make, I guess, for the drugs. It's just frightening what folks are putting into their bodies.
Dernal encouraged residents of Bloomington to call the state police hotline if they believe illegal drug activity is happening in their area. The Indiana State Police said they can provide anonymity to callers. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support for WFHB comes from Bloomington Pride, presenting Pride Fest on August 26th in downtown Bloomington. The festival celebrates LGBT community and culture and features a Pride rally, education workshops, live performances, family activities, and local vendors. Details on Facebook and at bloomingtonpride.org/pridefest. Katie Pilichowski is one of Indiana University's top astronomers. She holds the Kirkwood Chair at IU, was a staff member at the National Optical Astronomy Observatories, and is a past president of the American Astronomical Society. She and the rest of the astronomy department are gearing up for the Great American Total Eclipse that will sweep across the nation in the early afternoon of Monday, August 21st. Katie talks about the eclipse and her love for science as she joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest in the studio, Catherine Katie Pilichowski. What's on everybody's mind this month is the
eclipse.
Oh my
gosh. Coming up.
I can't wait. I'm going to be there.
Where exactly?
Well, I'm going to go down to Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
That's what I recommend for everyone.
No.
Nobody should miss this event.
Don't tell them that. They'll elbow me out of the way. What's going to happen, if anything, here at Indiana University?
So here, we're just partial. It's pretty extreme partial. We're going to have 94% of the sun covered by the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot. There's just going to be a little crescent left over. The campus, thanks to the provost and the Arts and Humanities Council, is planning a big party to celebrate the eclipse, which is going to be wonderful. It's going to be headquartered in the amphitheater, the brand new amphitheater on the campus.
Wow.
There's going to be a band and special moon pies and cookies and things. there's going to be, I think, a poetry slam and special presentations about eclipses in history and the folklore of eclipses. Many of the departments on campus are getting involved, except the astronomy department, because we're all going away.
Don't tell them. All right, now. The question is, if I'm walking down the street at the period of totality, and I'm not looking up in the sky because I don't want to burn my retinas, right?
Right.
Okay. How will I know? Will I know? Will I be able to see a difference?
You will be able to see a difference.
Uh-huh.
There will be some dimming. It will be a little darker than usual. It'll be like on a very cloudy day.
Yeah.
I think the most... There are two really striking things that you would see just walking down the street. One is, if you happen to walk under a tree, you will see many small crescent-shaped bright spots. These are basically images of the sun produced by little cracks between the leaves.
Yeah.
And they'll produce images of the eclipse sun, so you see many little crescents.
Very similar to when we were kids, we would make the little pinhole boxes, allowing a tiny little ray to come in.
And you get an image of the sun from that.
Yeah.
So it'll be a beautiful crescent. The other thing that I think will be really obvious is your shadow. So normally shadows are pretty fuzzy. And that's because the sun is half a degree across in angle.
Mm-hmm.
So the edges of the shadows are fuzzy. You get light from one side of the sun, the other side of the sun. That displaces your shadow a little bit, and it looks fuzzy. But when we have that thin crescent, shadows will become very sharp. So if you hold out your hand, you'll be able to easily see the shadows of your individual fingers.
Oh, that's what we recommend that to everybody in Bloomington.
I think so.
Hold out your hand, spread your fingers, and see a nice shadow on the concrete.
Very sharp shadow. Yeah, so I recommend that every one of your viewers get a solar viewer so they can actually look directly at the solar eclipse. If they can't, and don't look without a viewer, but if you don't have a viewer, get an old shoebox.
Yeah.
You can make a pinhole camera, cut out a little rectangle on one side, put some tinfoil on it, punch a very small hole.
Right.
On the inside, the opposite end of the box, put a white card. And then if you point, cover it up, cut a little hole in the side so you can see the white card. If you point the pinhole at the sun, it'll form an image of the sun, of the eclipse sun, right on the white card.
What happens if I haven't listened to this show? And why I wouldn't, I don't know. But I haven't listened to this show and I haven't heard the warning, don't look at the sun. What can happen?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. So in that case, looking at any part of the sun, it doesn't have to be a full sun, any little sliver of the sun that's not covered by the moon will form an image on your retina.
Mm-hmm.
And the brightness is so great that it will damage the cells of the retina.
For how long?
Damage will be permanent.
Ooh. So even the 94% coverage is dangerous.
Because there'll be a piece of the sun not covered. That thin crescent will burn anyone's retina.
I'm going to pop this on you, Katie. There's a minor planet named after you. It was discovered in 1999 by a fella named R.A. Tucker. They named that minor planet 17025 Pilichowski. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that neat?
Roy is an amazing fellow, Roy Tucker. He was an amateur astronomer, but also worked at the National Solar Observatory.
Ah.
And on his own, he built a backyard telescope to search for asteroids. And he found a bunch, and he was very kind to name one for me.
The research that you do, this is interesting. You get to figure out a little bit about the history of our galaxy, the Milky Way. You study star clusters in the Milky Way to figure out where the heck it all came from.
That's right. It's pretty amazing. There are old star clusters and young star clusters. We can figure out how old they are. And that tells us how the composition of the Milky Way has changed over time.
How did you get interested in this stuff, and why did you become a big shot in astronomy?
Hey, the big shot part I'm not so sure about,
but
I can tell
sure.
you about the fun part.
Okay.
So I was a child back in the 50s and 60s and was very much influenced by the space race, right?
Mm-hmm.
The launching of the first humans in orbit around the Earth, the need for the nation to develop more scientific capability.
Mm-hmm.
That all played out in my schools, in the classes I took, in the teachers I had. And my mother enrolled me in a book club. It was called the All About Science Book Club. Every month I got a book in the mail about something.
Mm-hmm.
Science, meteorology, dinosaurs, astronomy, almost all sorts, any science you could imagine. Because it had my name on it, I thought I had to read it. So I did, and I love those books. I learned so much on my own, reading quietly, you know, just sitting, reading these books. And I found that's what I enjoyed the most. It was the astronomy part that I loved the most.
Well, here's an interesting thing. In 2015, the Pew Research did a study, and they said, do you know the difference between astronomy and astrology? You want to know how many people knew the difference?
Oh, don't depress me.
No, it's not gonna. Oh. I was surprised.
Okay.
73% of Americans knew the difference a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Between astronomy and astrology.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's all. They knew the difference.
They knew the difference. That didn't mean they believed one or the other.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
But they knew the difference. Well, that's really encouraging. Nonetheless, I have to say it's discouraging to me when I get an email from a student saying, I want to talk to you about my astrology class.
I'm going to tie it in with what's going to happen on August 21st. Now, astrologers are telling us that our current president, he was born during, according to them, an eclipse. Therefore, he is especially susceptible to eclipses. This is what's going around right now. Isn't that fascinating?
That is. That is.
And so something may happen then or in the near future after the eclipse.
Well, I hope the president is planning to see this eclipse. If I were president, that's one of the things I'd put on my calendar. I would encourage every one of your listeners to go to Southern Illinois, to go to Western Kentucky, to go to Middle Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
and witness this event.
Now that's something that my guest, Catherine Katie Pilichowski, a big deal in the astronomy department at Indiana University, she's going to be watching that eclipse in August, August 21st. Katie, thanks for joining us on Big Talk.
We got to do both.
My pleasure, Mike. Thanks for inviting me.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab on our website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com, or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, what should be done about the opioid addiction crisis? Opioids are powerful prescription painkillers. It is easy to become addicted to them. Often, addiction leads to HIV and hepatitis C, both diseases transmitted by contaminated needles. Recently, opioid addiction in Indiana has increased sharply to what is now considered a crisis by many. Voices has gone out into the street and asked your friends and neighbors what they would do to combat opioid addiction.
I know needle sharing programs have been helpful in other areas, and just increased probably funding for substance abuse treatment, I think, could be helpful.
Something's missing in lives that have to turn to opioids. The other thing is prescriptions. I think we need to watch over-prescribing opioids, and I know some doctors are reacting the other way now because of the epidemic, but, you know, a tough look at who's prescribing what for whom.
Yeah, maybe they're writing too much prescriptions for people who's already addicted to drugs.
I think just more people undercover, probably, trying to purchase those things from people selling them.
It's all starting at People's Park and Seminary Parks, and I asked the police, why ain't they doing anything? They said it's an upper hand thing, a higher rank than them. They shouldn't tolerate it.
It's hard to get it under control. Where I'm from in Anderson, Indiana, heroin is just running rampant. And they just, I mean, I don't think any city or any government knows what to do about it.
I think that we should probably try to figure out what the root cause of it, why it started to become more of an issue lately. I mean, 15, 20 years ago, I don't think it was quite as bad as it is now. So if we can figure out what has caused it to increase, then maybe we'd have a better idea of how to change it and how to stop it.
It sounds like it's a big problem. Free needles sound like a good idea to me, but I really haven't looked into this.
I had heard it nationwide that there was an issue surrounding that. I didn't know if there was a certain spike specifically in our community compared to the rest of the nation.
I feel like that is an extremely tough issue, and it's something that really the individual needs to come to a place where they're willing to change and wanting to accept help. But I don't think punitive measures are usually very fruitful for individuals struggling with addiction.
I mean, I think when it comes to addiction, I actually like to focus on more of what can you do that's restorative instead of disciplinary. So I would like to see more efforts to offer counseling or rehabilitation services rather than focus on cracking down on it, focusing on how can we help these people continue their lives.
A lot of the problem seems really self-inflicted. I mean, they've let an opioid crisis turn into a literal AIDS outbreak that took them months to contain through like direct failure of state policy. So I don't really know what the solution is, but stop making it worse would be a good start, probably.
Ask why the sudden resurgence in this. Why are people escaping into drugs in the first place? What's attractive? Is it because they don't have anything better to do? Is it because they don't have job opportunities? Are they feeling stifled or something? What kind of support do they need from the city government, from the community to, I don't know, give them something else to do other than just drugs? I mean, why does somebody get into drugs in the first place?
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Arjun Balasandaram and Alex Davis, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week. a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have it directly delivered to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next here on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.